If you brought a Bible, why don't you open to the book of Matthew, chapter 25. Matthew's the first book in the New Testament, so if you start, kind of open it up to the middle and then kind of go to the right, you'll get there soon. You'll find Matthew, and we'll be in chapter 25 in a moment. And while you turn there, I'll just we started a new series last Sunday called The Generous Life, and this has to do with our possessions, our wealth, our finance, and what we do with all these things. This is week two. We'll go through the end of this month. We are going to have, Sunday mornings, I hope, are a time, I know that they're a time of inspiration. Not that I'm inspiring you, but that the Holy Spirit inspires or breathes into all of us. Anything you take away, if you walk away feeling like, wow, that hit home, or wow, I have to wrestle with that, like, that's evidence of the Holy Spirit working. But what we don't want, what I don't want, is that first level of inspiration, and there's also some information. That's kind of the mix between preaching and teaching. We have inspiration, which is the work of the Holy Spirit, and information, which is the work of the person here teaching. I don't want to stop there, because inspiration often impacts the heart, and information engages our mind, but what we really need is transformation. And if what we experience on a Sunday morning moves our heart and engages our mind, but it never comes out through our hands and our actions and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, then we have to stop and just say, all right, what's going on? Where's the disconnect here? And so one of the things that we want to do is make sure that the inspiration, the information has a way to move to transformation. And so this is about generosity. This is about giving. And we want to give an opportunity not to do that, but to learn and go even deeper. So July 8th, we are going to do a one-time class. Executive ministry lead Dave Baer and our finance chair is going to be leading this. It's a one-time class because we're going to go deeper, because there's only so much we can unpack with the whole church in 30, 40 minutes of a sermon. But this will be a class, one time, that's going to go into some other financial freedom best practices. And so if you are here and the message is about generosity, honoring God with our wealth, are inspirational, and maybe you're learning some stuff, it's informational, but you need help moving forward. How do I actually do it? Building a budget is difficult, second only to following that budget. Saving for your future can be difficult. It takes discipline. And so I'm under no misconception that, like, it's easy to save and it's easy to be generous. And sometimes I know we want to be generous, but our financial situation feels like heavy chains, that I can't be generous because I'm so strapped for cash. I can't be generous because I know that at the end of every month, there seems to be more bills, and my finances don't meet up. And so it's going to be a one-time. It's a little more interactive than a sermon, which is a bit of a monologue. And Dave's going to walk through some practices about debt and savings and giving. And I hope that you'll take us up on this opportunity. And then this fall, this is kind of like just a teaser course or teaser class. We're going to do a more a community group based on these principles, financial freedom. And that'll be a longer week-by-week opportunity to grow and put into practice the inspiration and the information we're learning here. So I don't want to be talking about it and encouraging you to do it and then leaving you no practical gifts. This is the first practical step. So if you need that help, July 8th, you can get more info and you can RSVP in the Church Center app. We'd love to invite you to be a part of that. This past week in the news, you may have seen Elon Musk. Did you see Elon Musk in the news this past week? Big deal. I believe the first trillionaire with a T. That's a lot of money, and we're talking about money this month, and so I thought with this in the news, I thought that was really timely. I thought I knew maybe what $1 trillion was. I had no idea what $1 trillion was. Maybe you've seen some infographics this week. I looked some details up. You can double check my math, but I already had ChatGPT double check it twice because frankly, I didn't believe it. But here was one breakdown I found online to help our minds, which we have finite minds, which means we have limits, right? The infinite means no limits, so we have finite minds, and the number a trillion is not infinite, but boy, it is close. If you and I, now this would be fun, if you could spend $1 million a day, first off, where would you start? I mean, if someone said, hey, I need you to start spending $1 million a day, that would be a full-time job that I don't even think we could manage. And I know someone says, no, I can manage it. or someone says, no, my husband can manage it. My wife could manage it. Certainly my kids in travel ball could manage it. But if you had to spend, if you didn't have to spend, if you spent $1 million every single day, 7 days a week, it would take you 3 years to spend a total of $1 billion. Whoa, uh-oh. And he's our first billionaire? No. We got plenty of those. Say, what's a billionaire isn't cool. You know what's cool? Being a trillionaire. If you spend $1 million a day, it'd take you 3 years of spending to spend $1 billion. If you spend $1 million every day, it would take you 2,740 years to spend $1 trillion. You can see why I didn't trust my math, and I ran it through a computer a couple times. And I wonder, how can a human process that type of wealth? What does that do to someone's mind and the way they see the world and the way they see problems? And I mean, you still have to go to bed at night and wake up in the morning and eat food, and certainly things change. But to a degree, we're all human. We're the same. And so, like, maybe you've, like most people, what would it be like to be rich, to have that type of wealth where you don't have to think about it? And I wonder how much good could be done with that wealth, with that depth of resources. We live in a world where one out of every four people on earth lack access to clean drinking water. One out of four. 25% of the people on the earth lack access to clean, readily available water in their home. 360,000 children die annually related to this lack, primarily through diarrhea, something that is a minor inconvenience for ourselves and our children, and yet 360,000 children die annually from causes around relating to diarrhea because of they don't have clean drinking water. You and I do not have access to Elon's level of wealth. But with $160 billion, we, the world, could solve the clean drinking crisis. $160 billion, that's a lot of money. That's a ton of money, but it can be done. And you and I don't have this level of wealth, but we do have wealth. All of us have wealth, and God calls us to use it generously. And as I said last week, I'm not going to give an amount or a percent. It's a principle and a practice of generosity. We began last week with Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 through 10. So we'll get to Matthew in a moment, but here in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10, it says, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops, and then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. So we honor God. We have to ask, is what I'm using my funds for, is it honoring to God? Is it the type of spending and investing and using that he would be pleased with? If you're married, if you share checking, if you have joint accounts and the money goes in, think about what type of expenses you might see charges to this retailer, Amazon, or sporting goods, or this or that. And you might ask your significant other, hey, was this, it looks like we got charged 17 times from Amazon last week. That's a mistake, right? Right? Absolutely, it was a mistake. So I'm going to go dispute all of those. That doesn't happen in our house. And I'm sure it doesn't happen in any of yours. But spending without restriction and without honoring the other person, something you share, spending something they don't know about or have a say in, that's not honoring to the other person. And so we want to take that same attitude. God knows all of our spending. Last week we talked about that all that we have is, in fact, His. Everything we have is His. And so because of that, we want to honor Him with the way we use it. The first fruits idea simply means giving back the first and the best of whatever we've been given. And then this principle teaches us that then our barns will be filled and our vats will be overflowing. A big idea that we'll be talking about all month is that everything I have comes from God, belongs to God, is intended for the purposes of God. We're kind of moving into that second one today, belongs to God. Everything I have comes from God, belongs to God, and is intended for the purposes of God. If you're a note taker, the working title of today's sermon is Faithful with Little, Faithful with Much. Faithful with little, faithful with much. The context of the verse we're about to read, the passage in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus is in the middle of a longer teaching about what does it look like to be ready? Because he's telling his followers, I'm going to leave and I'm going to come back and I'm going to return. And what's it going to look like when I return? And in verses 1, chapter 25, verses 1 to 13, the parable, the story that he uses to teach, the emphasis is that we need to be vigilant, which means that we are ready by watching. We're not going to get surprised when Jesus returns. We are vigilant. And here in verses 14 to 30, which is what we're going to read today, not only are we called to be vigilant, we're also called to be diligent. This is where vigilant means we're ready and we're watching, we're looking, we're prepared for that. To be diligent means that we're ready and we're working. We're not just sitting back and waiting, doing nothing. Now in Matthew 25, beginning in verse 14, the first two words is going to say, again, it. It will be like. What is the it? The it that he's referring to, because we're not reading the passage before, I want you to know, the it he's referring to is the kingdom of heaven at the time of Christ's return. The kingdom of heaven at the time of Christ's return. This doesn't mean heaven, eternity, like we die and then we go somewhere else. The kingdom of heaven is much, much more than that. It's more encompassing than that because the kingdom of heaven is now and not yet. Eternity has been initiated. We are heading towards our eternity because when we die, we are not done. We are actually transformed, and that's when life continues. And so the kingdom of heaven is not just the not yet, it's the now and the not yet. So look how Jesus, look at the story he uses to teach about the kingdom of heaven. Let me read this for us. My translation, the NIV, says the parable of the bags of gold. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one, he gave 5 bags of gold, to another, 2 bags, to another, 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work, and he gained 5 bags more. So also, the one with 2 bags gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come, share your master's happiness. The man with two bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with two bags of gold. See, I have gained two more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received one bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and I hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. The master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him, give it to the one who has 10, for whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Here we have a striking parable about what the kingdom of God looks like, how things operate under Christ's leadership. It's a parable. This is a story, a practical story with heavenly implications. And here the man or the master, we are meant to see that Jesus is referring, alluding to himself. Even the word they use for master is also the word throughout Matthew for the word Lord, same word. And then he gives these gifts depending on each person's ability. He gives unique amounts of treasure to different people based on who they are. Now, you might have a different translation. Like I said, we just read about bags of gold. You may have a translation that uses the word talents. And I want to look at this for a second because it's a little more literal of a translation. The CSB is one that gives us the word talents. And here, verses 14 and 15 said, for it is like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own servants and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, depending on each one's ability. And then he went on his journey. So a bag of gold sounds fun. A talent, we may or may not know what this is. There's a little bit of context there. We don't use this as a unit of measurement today. But a talent was a unit of weight. Not necessarily a unit of currency, like a dollar or a peso or a euro, but it's an amount of weight that was used for currency. It was about 75 pounds, and it was a high unit where, you know, we have pennies, which RIP, they're on the way out or whatever, and we have all the way up to $100 bills, right? So we have a low value of currency all the way up to a high value of currency. This is on the high end. A talent is a big deal because a talent, a little bit, there's some info on that, 75 pounds of either silver or gold. That's a lot of silver or gold. The daily wage for a common laborer, someone who would just go work in the fields for a day, to offer their hands, their energy, and their work for one day to a master. They'd work all day, and their pay would be one. This is a different unit of currency, of payment. 1 denarius. You worked all day. You worked 8-10 hours. Here is your denarius. Thank you, good worker. Now, if you worked for 6,000 days, the equivalent would be 1 talent. 6,000 days is 1 talent. So now we come to the context. What do we do with this? A talent. Let's see. Okay. The parable is not meant to be super precise. It's supposed to give us big ideas, but a couple of biblical scholars have taken different ideas of what gold is worth then and now and things like that. And so there's a conservative estimate, and then there's a higher estimate. D.A. Carson estimates that a talent would be worth roughly $300,000 in today's environment, economy. Grant Osborne takes a more aggressive approach. He says, no, it's probably closer to 800,000. Now, both of those guys, their estimates came up years ago, and you take inflation and just the way the world works all the way to today, and it's very possible that one talent, the equivalency today, 70, it depends on if it's gold or silver and what's gold and silver worth and things like that. You know, it fluctuates. But there is a chance that one talent today would be worth anywhere from $900,000 to $1.5 million. What Jesus is doing here, he's not meaning to be super precise, but what he is saying is that to each of these servants, the master gives an extraordinary amount of money. Can you imagine if I come up to you and say, I have something for you. I have $900,000, and I just need you to spend it. That sounds fun, right? Well, somebody in this room is about to be very lucky. Look under your seats. Don't look at, no, none of you even moved. You go, no, 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 he doesn't have $900,000. That's a lot of money. But keep in mind, all of the money belongs to who? The master. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The servants are, in fact, only stewards. This is a word you may know, you may be familiar with, or you may not. A more accessible way to think about what is a steward is a caretaker. They have been entrusted with something. When I was in my late teens and 20s, before I was married, I was able to, I house sat. I don't know how I just kind of fell into that, is I'd be home, different breaks and things, and people would trust me, hey, house sit, take care of our dog, and things like that, and different houses have different things. I house sat for a friend of mine, lived over in off of Coldwater Road in Fort Wayne, had a bunch of land and trails, and they had a four-wheeler, and they didn't tell me I could ride it. Thankfully, they didn't tell me not to ride it, so I tore their woods up while I was their caretaker. Had so much fun just using their home. They had a beautiful basement with a pool table, and they're like, yeah, have friends over, eat whatever's in the fridge, we're gone, it's, you know, primary, please take care of the dog, don't forget the dog, but the place is yours, use it, sleep in one of the beds, stay overnight, and I'd go home and things like that, but it wasn't my home, but I got to use it as if it was my home. I got to invite my friends over and play pool and ride this four-wheeler through the woods and do all kinds of things like that. It was a blast. But I couldn't treat it as if it was mine. I couldn't put an addition on the house while they were away. I couldn't loan it out. I couldn't make it into an Airbnb because it wasn't mine. I was simply caring for this home. And that's what these individuals are doing. They're caring for the resources of the master. You could even look all the way back and think about, if you're familiar with the Genesis story, Adam and Eve, God and all creation, he establishes the stars, the waters, the land, the animals, all these things, and then he creates man and he creates woman and he puts them in a garden and he tells them, take care of the place, name the animals, fill the earth and rule over it. Never does he say, and here are the keys, it's yours, goodbye. The implication, obviously, is that the creator of the universe is the owner of the universe. And yet the owner entrusts everything, everything to these two caretakers, these two stewards. Well, the stewards in this story get a lot of money. 5 talents. A lot of money. The high estimate, low estimate there for 5 would be $1.5 million equivalents, and the high estimate would be $4.5 million. Hey, I have $4.5 million. Can you spend it for me? And it says in verse 16 that this person went at once to work, because wouldn't that be fun? Again, you got to spend this money. We don't know how long it's going to be. I got to do something with this money. The other person in verse 17 gets 2 talents, and it says, so also this individual, the implication is, immediately went to work. And then we have the person who only gets 1 talent, and we say only a $900,000 equivalent, only, but this person behaves differently and says, no, I'm going to dig a hole. I'm going to hide this money, because I'm worried about maybe losing it or this or that. After a long time, verse 19 says, the master returns to settle matters. And he begins with the individual who was given five and, with that quick, efficient, focused work, made an additional five talents. Now, both belong to the master, and he brings them to the master. And then in verse 21, we see his reply. He says, hey, well done. Good, faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. Pause. I love that the master looks at potentially $4.5 million worth of wealth and calls that few. That should give us an idea of the scope of who we're dealing with. You may have a friend whose wealth dwarfs your own, and you know that you approach restaurants differently, or you approach vacations differently, and if you hang out with that person, you're not, hey, can we grab lunch? And they say, yeah, sure. And you're thinking, Jenny's, and it'll be on two checks. But if they're in charge, like, no, we're going to drive to Fort Wayne, we're going to Ruth's Chris, and it's on me, it's on one check. You know, you might have someone like that, and you think, wow, I would have to, again, pull up my Chase app and see, like, is the card going to go through at Jenny's? Okay, it's good. Yeah, we're going to be fine. And then there's someone else who says, let's go somewhere. Let's do something. Yeah, let's get extra. Let's, you know, go for it. That they approach money differently. And I see that here when the master says, you've been faithful with $4.5 million of wealth. A few things. I love it. And here now he unpacks a threefold reward of praise and added responsibility and the joy of success. The first is praise. He praises the servant. He says, well done. Great job. You did really good work. Like, that's what we want to hear, I think, dealing with our Heavenly Father. We want affirmation. We want good job. And then he gives added responsibility, which is unique, because sometimes you would think that your reward for doing work shouldn't be more work. It's like, wait. Shouldn't I get, like, a Saturday? Can I get a break? Don't think of it like that. Don't think of he did some work and got more work. What he gives him actually is more responsibility. Think of not just a raise at your job if you are employed. Think of a promotion. Promotions go, generally speaking, to people who have done a really good job at their current job. And you get called in, boss asks to see you, and you're kind of worried, hey, what's this about? And it's just translated, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with your job. I would like to talk to you about a promotion, moving you up the ranks in this company. Or in the military, a military context, no soldier, no one serving our country would be given a promotion and say, no, I'm good. Because it's an honor, right? It's an honor to be given more responsibility, more work. You have to oversee more people. It's an absolute responsibility. Praise, more responsibility, and the joy of success. Literally, he says, come step into the joy of your master. This is excitement. This is just hanging out with the person. Hey, the job is done. Let's just relax a little bit. Let's kind of relish in the great job that you did. Threefold reward. Then he goes to the individual who he had given two talents. Again, a tremendous amount of money. And this individual, with his two talents, invested it, worked it, and produced, made another two talents, so doubled it. So the first guy, or woman, turned one point, maybe, round math and all this, but maybe turned $1.5 million into $3 million. Pretty good day at the office. Second guy, or woman, takes $600,000 and turns it into $1.2 million. Doing okay. But the second person, after all the work, has less than the first person started with. So they're incredibly unequal. So there's a bit of a valuation here where the person that was given five made five, a tremendous, tremendous amount of money, and the second person did very well. But look at the response that this second person has as well. Verse 23 might sound familiar. The master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Verbatim. Exactly. Look, if you have a Bible in front of you, look at chapter or verse 23 and look at verse 21. Verbatim, the exact same threefold reward goes to the second individual as well, because the master is not rewarding the fortunes made, but the faithfulness exhibited. They were both faithful with the task at hand. How cool is that? It's not, this person made this much and you only made this much, so he gets the office with the corner view, and yeah, you get like a fist bump or whatever, but like no, they get the exact same response, the exact same reward, because the master values faithfulness. This is important for us. Here's where this parable, 2,000 years old, relevant today, has implications for how we live. I hear regularly, and I love this desire from people in the church. I love it. Pastor, I want to go deeper. How do I go deeper in my faith? I want more. Like, and that's a good desire. That whatever level of faith I'm at right now, I want to go more. Like, I want to praise that. But sometimes that what we think we need to go deeper is misguided. Sometimes we think, oh, I need to go deeper into the Bible. Well, that's good, and you'll grow in your understanding of the Bible. Do it. Some people think, well, now going deeper is, well, I got to start serving. And that's good. You'll now grow. You'll go deeper in your relationships with people. But I believe that if you really want to go deeper, learning to embrace a new level of generosity may take you to a deeper place than you can imagine. Generosity can be a path or an avenue towards spiritual maturity and depth that we didn't even know existed. Jesus says this, we'll cover this in the next couple weeks, in Matthew 6 and Luke 12, it says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Well, where do you want your heart to be? In the stock market? In a savings account? Tied to an investment rate? Tied to this or that? Tied to home or a car or this? Or do you want something more? And Jesus is providing this pathway to say, if you want to go deeper, open up your understanding of generosity, and you'll find this type of depth. In 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul writes, he says, this then is how you ought to regard us, as servants of Christ and of those entrusted with the mysteries that God has revealed. Now, it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. It's not that they have to come back with, oh, no, I gave you this much, and you have to have doubled it, or you have to have made at least, it's not a quota. There's not a dollar amount. It's faithfulness. You and I have been entrusted with wealth, and this goes far beyond money. This parable is not only about money, but it is also not about less than money. Think about the other gifts in your life, things that you have been entrusted with, your intellect, your time. We've all been given an equal amount of time. Your relationships and your family, your influence, your job, your literal talents, your health, whatever element of your life that you can think of as a resource, something that you can use for whatever purpose, has this component of being a talent that you are a steward of. And we have a master who has given us these things and expects something to be done with them. A number of years ago, I was at a fundraising event for Blackhawk School in Fort Wayne. Some of our family members went there at the time, and they do a fundraiser, a big dinner, a bunch of things you can bid on. And someone had purchased a table and said, hey, why don't you come enjoy the meal and all that stuff? And then there's an auction afterwards. And I said, I'm always up for a free meal, and I will not be bidding on anything. If you want to rescind your invitation, I get it. Get somebody it's not in ministry. And come. It'd just be fun. We want a full room. It'll be fun. Okay, so we'll go there. And we're there. And there's a friend of mine named Jody. And Jody wanted to bid on something. And Jody said, hey, we want this It was the top thing they were auctioning off. It was like, it was some kind of a gift card thing. I think it was maybe 12 gift cards to like the top 12 restaurants in Fort Wayne. The gift cards were each like $250 or something. So it was a big prize. And it was going to generate a lot of money, and they decided that they wanted that one. And I don't know why, but at some point, Jody had to step out. So he gave me the thing with the number on it. He said, hey, I got, look at this. Can you bid for me? I want that one. I said, the big one? He said, yeah, get me the big one. I said, okay. And then he's gone. And I'm thinking, oh, I should have asked a lot of questions. How much do you want to bid? How bad do you want it? Like we can take the $250 per gift card or whatever it was, times 12. I can tell you what it was exactly worth. Is that the limit? Jody's gone. All I know is that Jody wants this prize. And so they begin the bidding. Do we have $500? And a bunch of people, do we have $700? And I think, I'll take it for $700. Looking around, who saw me do that? I'll put it a little higher. Oh, I hear 7, 7. Do we have 8, 8? Somebody else. Do I hear 9, 9? And up it goes. And then all of a sudden, there's 3 or 4 people bidding in the room that clearly want this prize. And the number is becoming high enough that I'm getting very nervous. And I'm confirming, this is, you know, I'm checking the number on the card to make sure it's Jody's and not mine because they're attached to a credit card kind of thing. And we're just going, and we're just going, and we're just going. Then it's down to me and another person, and I'd bid, and they'd raise it. And then while that person's getting ready to bid, I'm looking for Jody and trying to make eye contact, like, what? I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I see him, and he goes, and I knew we were getting those gift cards. Just kept going, kept going, kept going. We won. I won. Now, that was fun. Now, but did I have any worry about where that money was coming from? No. I did not care less because I wasn't bidding my money. I wasn't using my money. I had been entrusted with an open line of credit to say, go do the thing and have fun. And I think that's maybe part of why Jody stepped out, because he knew it's fun to do that, and he'd probably done that before and said, you know what? I bet Mark would like to do that. We get to bid on this thing and spend a lot of money for a good cause. The first two servants, Jesus is teaching us that sometimes he woos us into generosity. And he paints this picture and says, let me tell you how I interact with the servants who are faithful. Oh, well done. You did great. You've been faithful with little. Let me give you much. Come enjoy in your master's happiness. But sometimes he doesn't just woo, he warns. And that's where we come into this last servant, the third servant. If you have different, more than one child, you may know sometimes that the same methods don't work. Sometimes just a stern look is all it takes to get your kid to straighten up. And other times it takes a lot more than that. You have to get creative and meet them where they're at. And I believe Jesus knows that sometimes he will woo us into his service and sometimes he warns us. And to this third individual who hid the money in the ground because he was scared, he made some assumptions that we don't know if these things are true. Oh, I knew you were a hard master. I knew you were doing this. You harvest over here. And the master says, oh, you knew. You know so much about me. Okay. And he pushes back on him. Where the first two individuals had a threefold reward, this individual has a threefold punishment. Instead of praise in verse 26, he gets condemnation. You wicked, lazy servant. He's not messing around. In verse 28, instead of added work and more responsibility, he actually gets a demotion. He strips him of responsibility. And in verse 30, instead of the shared joy of his master's presence, he gets separation. Get out of here. We do not know the amount of time for which you and I will be entrusted with the things we've been entrusted with. You may have money right now, but it has a way of vaporizing. We may have a physical ability, a relationship, or an opportunity right now that we take for granted that may not always be there. We don't know how long we'll be entrusted with our opportunities, but we do know that we have a master who expects us to use whatever we've been given, not for our comfort and our leisure and our plans, but for his. Now I want to tell you about an opportunity, because in verse 16 it says he went at once and put his talent to work. So I hope there's inspiration, I hope there's information today, but I want us to be a church that leans into transformation. So I invite Becky Porter up, and we'll wrap up with an opportunity for us as a church. Becky leads our outreach team, and as you know, if you've been around for a little bit, around Christmas time, we do a food drive we call Love in Action, and we, as a church, we go shopping, and we overwhelm Walmart, and we cram the aisles, and we really, really annoy the normal Sunday grocery shoppers. But we buy tons of food, thousands of dollars of food. We bring it back here, we sort it, and then we give it to families. We give it all away. And I've heard so many times, oh, we want to do that again, we want to do more. Well, this is an opportunity coming up. So, Becky, what opportunity do we have to put our talents to good use?
Well, good morning, church. First off, I just want to say thank you for being here. I'm just so happy to see all of you. We have this amazing opportunity. So my team and I, along with Pastor Mark and lots of prayer and guidance from the Holy Spirit, we really wanted to do a back-to-school event. And we know a lot of other organizations that do back-to-school events for backpacks and school supplies, but we came up with this. We came up with hoodies and haircuts. So what will happen, students sign up and they, local students from East Noble or other homeschool, other school districts, they sign up. They will come here. It's Saturday, August 1st. They will come in. They will get to shop for a hoodie in their size, in their choice. That will give them a little bit of dignity. And then we will also give them a free haircut. And that will be done by myself, some of my coworkers, and other just great hairstylists in the area. So here is where our opportunity comes in as a church. We need to buy hoodies. If you guys want to know the need for this, we already have 87 children signed up, and that was just in the first week. So we definitely are anticipating more. I think that our goal is around 150, but man, wouldn't it be awesome if we could do even more kiddos than that. So where we all come in is you can go out in the next 4 weeks. We will have drop-offs out in the connection point. You can go out while you're shopping. You can look for a hoodie, whether that's a hoodie from Walmart, Kohl's, wherever you shop. You can buy a brand new hoodie. If you don't know what to buy, maybe think of your own children or your grandchildren. Take them with you. What do they need? What kind of hoodie would they wear? Buy it in their size. We just want to provide this opportunity for students in the area to come in and just feel like they are getting something brand new and a hoodie of their choice and a haircut of their choice. So we as a church have the opportunity to go out, buy brand new hoodies, bring them into church. We will have racks and you can just hang it right up. And then we will do that until the middle of July, I think like July 12th or so. And then our team will come in, we'll sort them all, get it ready. There will also be serving opportunities. So if buying a hoodie isn't for you, we'll have serving opportunities later on for that day, August 1st. So yeah, I am so excited to introduce this and to get us going. And I know summer just started, but back to school is right around the corner again. So
I'm thrilled for this event, and here's why. We talked about this event a while ago, and outreach team met, and they said, this is a great idea. Let's provide hoodies and haircuts. Awesome, this is great. And then we kind of said, well, how do we get, you know, 150 hoodies times $20, $30 a hoodie. Okay, we're going to need to ask the church for like $3,000, $4,000, right? And we're going to do a special offering, and that would have been fine. And I think the church would have done that, but as we talked about it, I was like, hey, whoa, hold on, though. But what if, instead of asking everybody to give money, we cut that step out, because that's probably just going to involve one person in the family, whoever controls the app or the checking or the cash or whatever. Oh, yeah, I'll give some money. But if we can do the actual hoodies, now we get everybody involved. And I think this is a, I know this will be an opportunity where the mission is not so big it feels intimidating. We can afford that. And if you buy your hoodies, you mentioned this, you buy your hoodies on Amazon and you buy Amazon Basics, then that's where you should go to buy a hoodie. And if you buy yours, like our family doesn't, from Louis Vuitton or I don't know, whatever brand, you know, $250 hoodie, seriously, go buy a $250, buy what you would buy for yourself. You use an important word, dignity. If you've ever been in a position where you need to, you need new clothes, your kids need new clothes, and you know that the best bet of where that's going to take place is going to either be a hand-me-down or a garage sale or Goodwill, I know that you are thankful for those clothes and you are resilient and you care about financial management, but life gets expensive and you know that hand-me-downs are the way to go. But if you've ever been the recipient of that, you also know that sometimes giving your kid a brand new, gently worn hoodie, there's something in you that, I'm thankful my kid's going to be warm. God's provided for us. God's taking care of us. You know you're thankful for that, but sometimes there's that wish. And so we are going to be able to give that sense of dignity, not come in, get in a line, here's your thing, move out, but come on in. We're going to set the room up, that the church up, to be hospitable, to have some food and some refreshments and some games for little kids and families to sit while brother or sister's getting a haircut. Because life is expensive. Going back to school is expensive. Times how many kids you have. And so this is going to be an opportunity for us just to say, we love you, our neighbors. We want to bless you and encourage you. And here you go. But we can't do it. The outreach team does an amazing job. Their job is not to do the outreach. Their job is to create opportunities for us to do it, just like Love in Action. And so I'm thrilled starting next Sunday to see hoodies filling up the connection point. Can you buy more than one? Yep, if you want to. Buy as many as you want, the size, the type, all those things. If you have questions, please come see Becky. Are you going to hang out at the Welcome Center?
Yes.
Around at the Welcome Center today afterwards. If you've got a question, you got an idea, please come talk. And if you need to get on the list, you can talk to me or any staff member, deacon, elder, anyone. Say, hey, actually, because there's going to be people in our church like, hey, this would bless us, and it's time for us to receive this blessing. Well, you're going to be on that list too. We want to make sure the needs here are taken care of as well. I'm excited.
Yes.
You excited?
Yes,
okay. So you excited for that? You on board? Okay. Thank you, Becky, for the overview.